Well, we got some more music mashups coming your way. We'll talk some true crime with reporter Paul Wagner. Very interesting story and how they busted a cold case. We'll do all that right after this.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, comedian John Reeb, and the host of American Nightmare, Paul Wagner, with Gina Grad on News and Paul Bryan on Sound Effects. And now, on pins and needles about the L.A. mayor's race, because he's sick of stepping on heroin needles. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate, you get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
And Bald Brian.
You little bitch, you.
Somebody tweeted me a fantastic song. We were talking. This is the beauty of the listeners, the tweets, and the internet. We're talking about Eli's coming because we're talking about Laura Nyro and the other day, and that's a song that she wrote. She wrote tons of pop songs and then died and got in the, she got in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Well,
it must have been 25 years after she died, posthumously. But somebody said, have you heard this version of Eli's Coming, which is Maynard Ferguson? It's the foreplay.
Poor Dawson's grinding his teeth into powder trying to get your dad in there.
Oh, Jesus. Potential here. Don't ruin it, Dawson.
Come on. This is a jam.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if we'll ever revisit this era.
Too analog.
I mean, maybe. Maybe Seth MacFarlane's keeping it alive. But this guy, Maynard Ferguson, died in like 07, Canadian trumpeteer.
It requires too much work and talent, you know? It can't be produced on a board.
Yeah, and also, you got to pay all these session guys.
A lot of dudes.
As opposed to sampling stuff.
Speaking of which, how has this not been sampled?
I don't know. This kind of stuff should be all over movie soundtracks and commercials and things like that.
It's very Batman comic. It's very
James Bond sort of 65.
Right.
Then I said to Chris, oh, well, this guy must have covered a bunch of pop songs if this is what he's doing. And I said, look around. So he's covered a ton of, But we're talking about Stony End with Laura Nyro, the one...
Sarah Bareilles.
Right, performing at the whatever. He covered Stony End.
Nice.
Yeah, there's a thing, I don't know, Kismet-y, maybe it's the Great Magnet, but when you're on something, you're kind of on something, and if you scratch around a little, you'll connect it to something or bring it around. I don't know what that force is in life. Well, maybe my dad could, Dawson, maybe my dad can accompany him on this one.
This is no tribute to that dead woman. Kind of works.
Now, Dawson, if you're really good or had more equipment, you could get DJ Khaled strumming along and my dad playing along to some of these great Maynard Ferguson covers. All right. So anyway, somebody tweeted me that, and God bless you for doing it. Maybe maybe you can work on, let's see, you got My Sweet Lord by George Harrison. Nice. But, Doss, I'll let you buy some DJ Khaled time and maybe some Jim Carolla time there. All right, so update, the 12-hour walk, which is slated for this Saturday. Yes, I have a problem with that.
Oh, come on.
I knew you'd be devastated. Couple of things.
Okay.
We don't need to do it on the same day, although it couldn't hurt.
Right.
That's for sure. The math works out that this Saturday I am in Malibu, and there's no place to walk except for PCH
where
Ben Vereen was hit by a car.
Blood Alley.
For a guy who's not cautious about anything, whenever I see guys riding bikes down PCH, I just go, there's three fatal accidents every 10 minutes on PCH.
Like
somebody hits somebody all day, every day. I don't want to just walk to Oxnard and turn around and walk back. But then your only choice is going up the canyon, but that seems grueling for that. So the following week, I'm in La Cañada.
Okay.
And that's where I want to begin my journey. Now, if you're wed to this Saturday, we can break it off.
We'll break it off. Now, if we're making, I don't know about excuses.
No, I mean, we can break it into two pieces. You can do Saturday.
Yeah.
I can do the following Saturday.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Okay.
Perfect. All right. That's what's going to happen. Also, gets real dark real early.
Mm.
So how do we feel about like 10 hours? Because by 5, I'm not walking around my neighborhood anymore.
Like in a headlamp.
It's already dark. So I was thinking like 6:30 to 5 or 7 to 5 because I'm not walking by myself.
This is a new wrinkle because we just changed the time.
It's really dark.
And it starts getting dark about 5:10. Now,
I could do 6:30 to 5, but I don't feel comfortable walking around by myself at night.
Now, one could say you could go 5 to 5.
No, please.
But
it's still dark.
Brutal.
Yeah, but when is the sun up? 5:30?
Sun's up about 6. It starts in about 6 right now.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
what's the official?
Let's see.
What's the computer say? Because you might be able, look, you might be able to do 5:30 to 5:30.
True.
And I'm just saying, coming up an hour short is, I don't know. I don't know if that's going to feel good to you.
But he had to do it in 10 hours.
6:22 is the
sunrise.
And I don't know what's
4:53 is sunset.
Days are getting shorter. So who had to do it in 10 hours?
He did. Remember, his wife called and said, you're not going to make it if you keep doing 12-hour days. You have to do 10-hour days.
Oh, no. In the Arctic.
Yeah.
No, she said, you got to stop doing 10-hour days and start doing 12-hour days.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
That's how you make it.
How? I thought, but he wouldn't be gaining ground.
On 12-hour days?
2 extra hours.
Oh, never mind. Never mind. Forget
He didn't. He wasn't going to have the guy walked across Antarctica. Was not going to have enough food to make it to the other side.
Well, I'm not going to have enough food to make it till 6 at night.
So what do you? So this is an experiment. No headphones. No media.
No
best of Lord sitar.
No.
Just you by your lonesome. Mm-hmm. You take your phone. You can use it for time or
I'm gonna
whatever.
I'm going to keep the location on. Mm-hmm. So I just want to know how long I go and also if I get abducted. But I'll just put it in my backpack.
Do you bring extra socks, foot powder, the kind of stuff we're talking about?
I don't have to because according to Vinny, who I went over this with, he made me buy these like fancy wool socks that don't have to be changed out.
Oh, really?
So I'm going to wear those. They're cute. They have bears on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to wear my Nikes, I guess. And I got a big thing of water. I'm just going to put in my backpack.
All right. Okay. I should get that sock too.
Yeah, I'll send you the link.
All right. So we'll keep you posted on that. Chris had a little situation hit near home for him. Yeah. Some controversy.
Well, this one actually wasn't me, but it was for my brother's wife, my sister-in-law. So she is a yoga instructor. And I don't want to give too much away because I don't want to draw too much attention to it online. But what happened was she was working the lobby. And this, it's in downtown, so they keep the lobby locked when they're not doing, when there's no session, and then they'll open it up once it opens. But they had a guy trying to, as a walk-in trying to come in. He's trying to jiggle the door. It's not working. Are you on the list? She asks. He's not. He's a walk-in. It's like, okay, well, we gotta get you on the list or something. And so this guy then takes out his camera and starts filming it, going, hey, they're not letting me in. Ugh. And he has a lot of followers. And he's zooming in like her face, and like, hey, I'm being racially profiled by her.
Christ.
And she's, by the way, he's Mexican, or at least he looks like Latin, Latino. And she's lived in Mexico. She grew up in Mexico. Like, she's Mexican too. So it's like weird that he's like, I'm being racially profiled. Everybody.
He didn't plan this out very well.
No, but it's getting a lot of traction locally to where it was getting harassed online by so many people. She had to delete her Instagram, delete her website. They Yelp bombed the yoga place.
It's
all the commenters on it. They're just
followers.
Like, let's all get them. Let's all give them zero stars on Yelp. And everyone's like, just did, already did it. And let's find
the
they fuck? Tagged her, so everyone's attacking her for racially profiling this guy. But like, he's the one that came up with it, right? Like, there was nothing she did that to say that it was.
She was
his
just
race.
In the wrong place.
She's just like, no, you're not on the list, and I don't have you on here. And like, so he does this whole selfie video thing. It's edited. It's going around. It's
God,
terrible.
This fucking,
I feel so bad.
This horrible narcissistic piece of shit society we've crafted. And by the way, nice job, everyone who bangs the racial drum all day, every day. How could you not have more of this?
Yeah.
Is
they're
like
they're commenting
thing?
on their the places Instagram, like they're just, they're everywhere. It's crazy how big this is getting.
I don't mean to fight fire with fire because sometimes it backfires. But would it be worth giving the name out so we can all drown that shit out?
I mean, I was thinking about it because my brother's like, will you post it? We tell everyone
we'll do it.
But then I thought, if more people see it, is that just going to inflate the algorithm?
But not our listeners. Our listeners can combat those shitty people.
They've got range. She's into yoga and playing, perpetrating race hoaxes. It's awesome.
And
she's got a lot of hobbies.
Regardless of what, I just don't think it's fair to say you're being racially profiled when there's no real.
When they're the same race?
Well, one, they're the same race. And two, it's just. And I know for a fact she's not racist or anything. It doesn't feel like that at all. So it's like weird that she's getting called racist and having to. This is her livelihood. And she had to. Oh, and she resigned from the studio.
Oh, my God.
Because it just got too nuts.
So she lost her job. She lost her social media stuff, and she's getting
attacked. Yeah, she's worked
personally.
So hard, like, building up her yoga stuff.
This guy really sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, he seems like a young kid. A couple of face tattoos, a couple of neck tattoos.
He's got him on the show.
The woman looks like she's right by the door trying to ask him politely, do you have a thing? I'm just watching this on mute.
Well, listen, everybody, whether you're being asked to leave an airplane because you're unruly or you can't get into a yoga studio. If the rules are the rules and they just apply to everyone, then how is this racially based? And then also the hubris of just deciding everything is race-based in 2022 in Long Beach?
Yeah.
For all
I know,
it's
insane.
Places.
Like, he's like looking at the bush like, it's because I don't look like these people that I'm not getting let in.
Jesus
and
Christ.
And I mean, he has a lot of influence. So, like, people are really fired up about this.
That sucks.
Telling you, I've been shouting about this from the mountaintop for 25 years. It's a fucking horrible way to go through society. Breaking everyone off into groups and then you pit them together. You see, here's the problem. You can't break people off into groups without whatever the negative side of being in groups is. Politicians don't put it that way. Politicians go, I want to take young African American women and young Latina and the gay and LGBT and the trans community. I want to build them up. I want them to have a voice. I want them to unify. Like, want them to come together. Yes, that's what Art Rooney wants to do with Pittsburgh Steelers fans. But eventually they're beating the fuck out of a Ravens fan in the parking lot because there's no such thing as just taking this one group. We're going to elevate. And by the way, so that's what it is. We should all just pick a group and see if we can elevate them the fastest. Mark Geragos, you're in charge of the Armos. I'll handle the white. John Reap will handle the white guys. He's a better spokesperson. And we'll just all break off, and then we'll try to elevate. And then at some point, there's an election that comes along, and then your group is running against the other group, and now you have to kind of take down the other group while building up your group. It's a mathematical impossibility that's going to end up in the shit show that we have now. I've been around for a long time. This shit didn't exist in 1995. Mm-mm. People just fucking got along and went about their shit. It doesn't mean there weren't racists. It just meant it wasn't the overwhelming concern of every granular piece of society that it had to be woven into every single encounter.
Well, and being on MTV, you definitely know at the time what was the thing. And what if they were telling you, don't talk about this, you'd know.
Yes.
And by the way, you know what other microcosm works the way you described, where you kind of divide up into races and see who can do the best? Prison.
Yes, it's exactly how the prison yard works. It's not good. Everyone thinks it's progressive. Like, hey, this is a good thing. We're heading this way. But really think about, like, we're going to have the first Latina female, you know, mayor of, you know, it's like, well, then what's the implication? The implication is we're going to have the first female Latina mayor, and then she's going to understand her people. And then what? She's going to do more shit for them than the Asians? Like, it's so fucked up. Politicians are fucking horrible. Everyone buys into it. And then what it is, most people agree with me, but then they're scared. So they have to just kind of sit back and go, I don't want to weigh in. But the people that aren't scared are the race baiters who dive in and stoke the fire. Mm. Blah. Knock it off, everybody. And the only way it works, I don't know if you're sister-in-law's got this bone in her body, but You have to start telling them to fuck right off. Well, I mean, that's the only thing that works, because these people are fucking idiots and they will not stop encroaching.
Well, I'm still so heated about this. I'm looking at the comments all the time, like seeing where this thing is going. And anybody who defends the yoga studio or my sister-in-law is getting torn apart too. So I don't even know.
Defends the yoga studio.
Yeah,
just think about what that sounds like. Hey, it's not the Klan rally.
Jesus Christ.
There are people that go like, oh, I'm Mexican. I go there all the time. Like, I don't see anything like that. And people are like, well, you don't have face tattoos, or you weren't there, so how can you tell what happened in this? And look, they're right on that part. They weren't there. But
a large percentage of folks who live in the Long Beach area were not physically there.
Yeah,
it's overwhelming.
It's actually all on video.
It's up to 70%, I hear.
Yeah. So, and I mean, the sad part is, like, this guy, I think he really believes that. And that's the thing.
Well,
like,
that's the reason he really believes that is, A, because he's a narcissist. But B, we as a society and all the fucked up politicians spoon fed retards this shit for the last 20 years. And yes, they do believe it now.
And it's being rewarded by all the support he's getting.
Yeah. It's a whole sad situation. It just bums me out.
Everyone listening on Instagram who's listening to the show should report him for harassment.
Targeted. And please go on Yelp and give this studio 5 stars, because
Yelp shut it down already. They're like, we're not taking any reviews because
this
is getting bombed.
Well, good.
All right. Well, on other subjects, but speaking of race, I brought home some Indian food the other night.
Delish.
And I love Indian food.
Me too. I'm the only one in my house who will eat it.
Oh, so.
I was about to say that. Like, Danny Two Sheets, his wife is just this good old girl from Texas, like was a cheerleader for the Texas team and all that kind of stuff. And literally won't eat sushi, not going to eat Thai food, not going to eat Indian food. And I thought, how miserable is that if that's your partner?
That's tough.
She's great.
Yeah, she's
I love her, but she's from a place and she grew up on steak and potatoes and will not venture into a sushi place. He's Danny Two Sheets living in Santa Monica. He wants to eat sushi every night. But what happens when your better half doesn't want to go? And I feel that way. Like, anyone who's got a partner who's good to go with Indian, sushi, Thai food, whatever, stop and hug them. Give them a hug, because that situation where the other person you want to go out to dinner with is limited to the Golden Corral and the Sizzler, that's an issue. Yes, Brent.
Is that person, footnote to this, is that person a close cousin to the person you talk about who's like, sorry, I don't know that movie. I wasn't born. It's like, sorry, I don't like sushi or Indian food or whatever. I was born in Texas. Like, does that give you free range?
Yes,
just
all right.
End all roads?
Okay. This is something I've thought long and hard of. Like, many years ago, I had some AV guy who was coming to my house 20 years ago. And 18 years ago. And he was like, I want to come to your house and check this and run the wiring and blah, blah, blah. They always announced the guy who came before them should have had his hands cut off because he was a hack and he's ruined the system and blah, blah, blah. But this guy, who is at the time 45-year-old guy, comes to the front door, swing the front door open, and there's Molly, the blonde lab, wagging her little friendly tail. And here he is, and he's like, could you put the dog away? And then I go, I don't really have a place to put the dog, but she's just walking around. She's nice as can be. Gentle. You know, Molly was the kind of dog where when the kids were three, they dive on Molly and start twisting her ears off and stuff, and she'd just sit there.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I'd really be more comfortable if you just put the dog in the bedroom and shut the door.
Jesus.
And I said, And he said, I was bit by a dog when I was seven, and I didn't say it, but I was like, now you're 45, douche.
Yeah.
Get the fuck over it. And people do a lot of like, my grandparents took us to eat Thai when I was 11, and I bit into a chili pepper. Well, get the fuck over it.
Right.
Get the fuck over it. Like this, it's never, by the way, we can't, there's no back to race. Like you can't go, I got bullied by a black kid when I was 10. Now I hate black people. Yeah, right. Get that recording. The point is this. No, get the fuck over it. That, yes, you were raised this way.
Yeah.
I was raised on a service porch with a crazy mom, and we ate dandelions because they grew in the backyard.
And you never complain.
But I don't have a taste for it
now. You don't step foot on a deck.
I want to go out and eat as much fucking different food as I can.
Yeah.
Well, why are we relying? Well, I used to wet the bed when I was 10. I like to eat boogers as well. I read at a second grade level once. Yes, these are all things that you did when you were 10. I rode a Huffy bicycle. Yeah. I couldn't operate a motor vehicle. Yes, all things you did when you were 10. Now get the fuck over it and progress a little as a human being.
I hardly had any sex when I was 10.
Almost none.
You're not going to have any now?
Right.
And that's the other thing. We tell my stepson, I tell him, I don't like it. You do have to take a no thank you bite.
Yeah, that's so big in our house too.
Do I have to tell adults, well, just try this Vindaloo. But just take a no thank you bite because you're 37.
Yes. So many people sniffing and wanting to know what's in everything and then making the proclamation like, I don't like lamb, you know, whatever. Just take a fucking bite.
Yeah.
And I didn't like mushrooms when I was a kid.
Me either.
I like mushrooms now.
Love.
I didn't much like beets back then. I like beets now. Like, you can evolve.
Taste change.
The world got open for you.
Oh, we got a little mashup, though.
Yeah, hey, before we go, we got a little bit of Stony End with Jim Carolla and DJ Khaled. It's a lot of noise.
Another one. Another one.
That's pretty much it.
Good. At least Jim Carroll's in the right key.
Another one.
I love that in that clip of DJ Khaled, his head was rocking.
Yeah.
Like he was.
He's feeling what he's doing.
Yeah. We should experiment with. You know what we should do with DJ Khaled? Let's send him different instruments. Like. I got a saxophone from the Stan Kenton family. Bird. Let's see. Who's Bird?
Charlie Parker.
Chris, send him a saxophone, but we'll put a little plaque on it from Charlie Parker.
Oh.
The Charlie Parker estate. We'd be honored if you accept it. And then we'll send him like a ukulele from the Tiny Tim. account. I mean, you pick a trombone
Miles
from
Davis from a trumpet,
yeah. Right?
Satchmo.
Guy Lombardo's, or, yeah, clarinet from
Woody Allen.
Huh?
Lizzo?
No,
who?
Lizzo? Flute.
No, played the clarinet in the big band. That was shit.
I don't think I know this one.
Yo, you will when you hear the name of the guy. I always think it's the guy who died in the plane crash, but I don't think it is. All right, I'll let you do it. Anyway, we send him all these
That's
instruments
good.
From the family
Benny
of
Benny Goodman.
Yeah, Benny Goodman. Right, right. Okay. And then we film. He films himself playing it,
wailing on it,
and then he puts it on the internet.
You know what? I didn't tape it, but because I was cooking. But my stepson pulled a Khaled last night because I was listening to John Popper. I was listening to Blues Traveler.
Nice.
Hook came on. This kid gets so inspired, runs into his room, comes out, comes in the kitchen with his harmonica, and just starts fucking up this song so bad. And he was having so much fun. Now he likes his harmonica.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Ace Man, TSA is taking a page out of the old redundancy from the airplane. Don't disable, tamper with, or otherwise touch, whatever it is, the smoke alarm. Well, now at TSA, it says no physical violence of any kind will be tolerated. So no orbital fractures, no spinning crescent kicks, no baseball bats to the knee, no violence of any kind.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
They just post that placard that says this is a hate-free zone.
Oh, good.
And then we take care of guns and kicks and bitings and everything else. Paul Wagner is with us. The podcast, American Nightmare, Unknown Subject, Season 3, available wherever you listen to finer podcasts. Good to see you, Paul.
Hey, Adam. Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
You're in D.C. right now?
Well, I'm in a little park, actually, just outside of Washington, D.C. I'm in a little town called Kensington, Maryland. I had to find a place because I work out of my car, and I don't want you guys to be looking at the back of my car. So I figured I'd find a nice setting like this.
It's quite scenic.
You work out of your car.
I do, yeah. I have a hybrid job. I produce podcasts for WTOP News Radio, and then I also work for the NBC-owned station here in D.C. So because of COVID, for the last 2.5 years, reporters have been working out of their cars or out of their homes, and we used to ride around in live trucks with photographers, but we stopped doing that when COVID came. So that's, my car's my home right now.
I bet it smells weird. Hey, we're talking today about the infamous Potomac River rapist. What is that?
Yeah.
What is that case?
So, for your listeners, I think I can draw together for you that it's not dissimilar to the Golden State Killer for these reasons. He's not nearly seriously as famous as the Golden State Killer. However, he did some things that were very similar to that man in that he was very strange, very bizarre, very violent, stayed underground for years and years and years. He was a killer. He was a rapist. Broke into homes, cut phone lines, raped a babysitter, raped a doctor, and he killed a brilliant scientist in Georgetown, right outside of Georgetown University back in 1998. And then he disappeared for over 20 years. His DNA never showed up anywhere. And the police couldn't find him. The DNA didn't hit in the CODIS FBI, national database. And so the D.C. police and the Montgomery County police, where these rapes took place, decided to try genealogy. And you may recall when I was on your show the last time, we talked about genealogy, and this was another podcast series that I did about a murder in a hospital. Well, this genealogy led them to a man named Giles Warrick, who was 60 years old, living down in Conway, South Carolina. And so they had DNA that linked him to as many as 6 rapes here in Montgomery County, and then a rape in D.C. and a murder in D.C. So like the Golden State Killer, he did his awfulness and committed these horrifying crimes for years and years. Police couldn't catch him. He goes underground. Nobody hears from him for years. And then suddenly genealogy works. You get the ancestry databases going, and they find this guy. And just like the Golden State Killer. So this podcast is about, we start out with the murder of the scientist back in 1998. And then we kind of go backward. And I talk to detectives and family members, and we track this guy's progress from when he committed the murder first, and then all the rapes, and then up until how they caught him. And it's just, it's a fascinating story because of this one detective here in Montgomery County, Maryland, who used the genealogy and tracked this guy down to a family tree over in Oxon Hill, Maryland, and was able to find this guy. And so the podcast is 7 episodes. The 7th episode will be out next week. And the timing is really good here because it leads right up to the trial. He'll go on trial at the end of this month.
So let me ask a hypothetical to everybody, which is when you're born, you get a social security number, and then the government just tracks you and extracts tax money from you for the rest of your life. And if you don't pay them, they'll put you in jail.
Right.
With Wesley Snipes. Where do you guys come down on getting the DNA sample when you're born that goes into some large database and then it's just there? And if there's a rape, they can check it.
I'm sure there's plenty of movies either already out or coming out as to why that's a bad idea. But at this moment, I think it should be standard.
Feels Orwellian, but that's where we're at.
Yeah. Paul, what do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, the privacy people and the lawyers will tell you to, you know, go take a leap. But here's one of the interesting parts about this and why genealogy is so fascinating is that there's two databases now that allow law enforcement to search. One's called GEDmatch and the other one's called Family Tree. Now, there was a time where the people that put their DNA into these databases didn't know that law enforcement was going to search them. Okay. So these databases, then what they did is they took everybody out of they optioned them out. Let's put it that way. Okay. So they notified everybody who had their DNA in these databases. They said, look, we've got to be careful here. We don't want to let law enforcement search our database if you don't want them to. So if you don't want them to, you just tell us and we'll opt you out. And so
I would do that and then just arrest. I'd arrest all the people who opted out.
Suspicious.
Well, then they said, okay, if you want to help law enforcement, you can opt back in. And amazingly, so a lot of people did. And now there's millions of people in these databases that are saying, I got no problem with that. You can go ahead and allow law enforcement to search the databases. And that's how they're finding these guys. That's how they're finding these. They're solving these incredible cold cases that have, you know, have been baffling detectives for 20, 30 years. And they're also, the other thing they're doing with this is they're identifying bodies that they haven't been able to identify for 20, 30 years. And then the police, once they know the identity of this person, then they're able to then work backward to see if they can solve the murder. So I follow this. This group called DNA Solves. And it's almost like every week they have a story where genealogy is leading to the identity of a body that's been found somewhere and they didn't know who it was. And then through genealogy, they're able to find out who this person was after, you know, 20, 30, 40 years. Wow.
So give us, because I'm such a layperson with this technology, give us the way genealogy worked to catch this guy.
So he had a cousin. I don't know the cousin's name at this point. That has not been revealed. There's been a lot put out in court documents. But there's a cop here in Montgomery County, Maryland. His name is Steve Smugareski. And he had a hobby. He just had a hobby of being able to go down the rabbit hole and look at records and search databases and find people. And it was a hobby. And so the Montgomery County Police gave him a number of cases they asked him to try and solve. And he did some really baffling cases here in this county. And then they gave him this case, the Potomac River rapist. And he was able to find a cousin that was very, very close. They called them Center Morgans. I know that gets technical here, but it's basically the number of locations within somebody's genetic profile. And he found enough of these locations to identify this cousin. And then he built a family tree out from that cousin. And he started to zero in on this man named Daniel Parker Swan, whose DNA was very close to the killer's DNA. And then they determined that this Daniel Parker Swan had a son out of wedlock. And then they traced it to this guy named Giles Warwick. And then they went down to Conway, South Carolina, and they knocked on his door one morning and said, "Hey, you know, we've been investigating these rapes in Montgomery County, and we'd like to get a sample of your DNA. Would you be willing to give it up?" And he did. He voluntarily gave it up. And then what they did is they got into a car, and they drove from Conway back here with the sample. And within hours, they knew they had a match. And the next morning, they went and arrested him. And so he's been locked up now since 2019 and awaiting trial. That's very generally, you know, how it works.
I'm so baffled and confused by the rapist. And I'm going to sound like a weirdo, but I get the part where the guy and the girl, and they've been drinking and he's forcing himself on. I don't know how it physically works when someone is jogging by a river and you jump on them
hop
and rape
the
them.
Yeah.
I don't know how you pull that. How does one pull that off? I mean, you must have the most twisted mind in the world. And in a weird way, I know murder is worse than rape, but I can think of many people I'd like to die in my life. My rape list is much shorter.
Yeah.
It just seems like you're a worse person. You know what I mean? Like, who doesn't wish Vladimir Putin was dead? You know what I mean?
Raped?
That's it.
Oh.
No, well, that's the second example.
Sorry, I jumped ahead.
I'm just saying, like, it's weirder, and it makes you a more twisted individual, I guess, is what I'm saying. Versus the, no, your partner who stiffed you when they were trying to fence the ice, you know, and you put a cap in his ass. Like, that kind of get God. That. Yeah. I wouldn't do it, but it lives somewhere. That chick's jogging and I got a boner. It seems like the most twisted of all the minds. Sorry.
What's interesting about what you say there, Adam, is that what confused these detectives for so many years is that he changed his behavior. So at times he was stalking these victims and then he was hiding inside their houses and he'd wait for them to come home. And then in other cases, he was attacking off the street. And so the detectives now, this is another interesting part of law enforcement, how cops think, is that now they know they have these cases all connected through DNA. They're saying, wait a minute, this guy not only had an MO where he's waiting inside homes and cutting phone lines, but then he's also going and he's attacking women on the street and dragging them into the woods and beating them. So two different MOs, but because of DNA, they know it's the same guy.
That's so great.
So,
because we think pattern wise, we would never assume that was the same person.
Yeah. Well, right. And it used to be that way where the cops had this tunnel vision, right? Where they're like, okay, well, if this guy's acting this way, and then, we just got another case where guy drags somebody off the street, and they're like, it can't fit, right? But they don't think that way anymore. Now they know that these guys are able to compartmentalize this stuff in their heads, right? And they go off and commit these terrible crimes, and their MOs aren't always the same.
So Daniel Parker Swan submitted to the DNA test. Is that what you were saying?
No, actually it was a cousin of Giles Warwick, our suspect here in this case.
Oh, well, then suspect, Daniel Parker Swan.
The suspect's father.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And so once they were, so So when you build out the family tree, what you're doing is you're trying to find the person that has these center Morgans. I know it's a technical term, but who has the most that are as close to your suspect as possible? And that's when they zeroed in on this guy, Daniel Parker Swan. And that was the father of this guy, Giles Warwick. And so
you name your kid Giles so he doesn't become a serial rapist. You know what I mean?
I think that's foolproof.
How many Gileses have engaged in this kind of activity?
None that I can think of.
That's a preventative measure to try to stop your kid.
That's a firewall.
Yeah, when you do that Jesse James Dalton thing, of course that kid's going to be a maniac.
Yeah.
But Giles, Jesus Christ.
Maybe it was a Boy Named Sue situation.
Oh.
Everybody made fun of him.
Mm-hmm.
One of the more fascinating parts of our podcast, if I can give myself a plug here, is that because the case has run up against the trial, the prosecutors in D.C., introduced the two interviews that the police did with him into evidence. And because they did that, it became a public record. And then the judge released those interviews to us. So we have the two interviews that the police had with this guy the day before when they asked for his DNA, and then the day after when they arrested him. And one of the more interesting things that he says in the interview after his arrest is the detective looks at him, he goes, We know that we have your DNA in all of these crimes. So how did it get there? And his response is, I don't know.
Hmm.
That's what he says. I was shocked by that. But yet he's still maintaining his innocence.
Yeah, I guess he thinks he has nothing to lose by saying, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I'm not here to defend the man, but I don't know what answer you could summon for why is your DNA on all these victims.
I think most people would say it's not my DNA, right?
Oh, they go, I would say it was a windy day or something.
My barber did.
Yeah, he's going to say I just got my haircut.
Yeah. So is there? So are we putting these cold cases to bed at a record pace now because of not only people like you, but the DNA and the genealogy and then all the yentas that are at home listening to
home
your podcast or doing... I've said it a few times. I would rather, if I had a task, and it really didn't matter what task, and I think we've all experienced this in our lives and seen anecdotally the evidence. Give me one super motivated housewife versus a semi lazy detective. I put my money on that housewife, and I'm not limiting it to unsolved murders. I'm opening up to every facet of life. Like, give me that chick with a fucking bone and a computer and a little extra time. I've seen it my own life. Like the motivated, I'm fucking handling this. People, we've run into these people. Mm-hmm. We've sadly run into the opposite of these people, but they'll get it done.
Yeah.
And who was the woman who came in here and sat over there? Her daughter was
absolutely
put on blast by the internet guy or the
Charlotte Laws.
Charlotte Laws. Yeah. Yeah. No. With a computer, everyone's kind of an expert now. If you think about it, now it's all about motivation.
Yeah.
And the more motivated, if we could create an army of motivated people all just sort of working to solve this stuff.
And we kind of have.
And with the technology, I'm guessing we're clearing these cases at a record pace.
They are. And you make a good point. There are people out there who do that and who have the ability and the wherewithal and the desire to do it. But keep in mind this, as these ancestry databases continue to grow, they're going to solve more and more of these crimes. So the last time you had me on, I was talking about my podcast, Murder in a Safe Place, where this nurse was murdered in a hospital. The detective is still working on that case today. 2 years later, he's still trying. He's going down through these family trees, and he's identified a family tree in Baltimore that he believes the killer is part of, but hasn't gotten him yet. So... But here's another way to look at it, too, is as they grow, there's a possibility that maybe somebody in in the family of this suspect suddenly, you know, 2 years later, puts their DNA into one of these ancestry databases, and then bang, you've got even a closer relative to identify your killer or your suspect, right? And so, and that's been happening too, because as these databases grow, just like the FBI's CODIS database, as that has grown, you know, cases, more and more and more cases are getting solved.
So this thing's going to trial when?
Jury selection at the end of this month, and then they'll have the trial first part of December. And he's charged with murder here in D.C. For the murdering the scientist outside Georgetown University.
Is he 60, you said?
He was 60 when he was arrested.
Oh, so he's 63 now.
63, almost 64. I saw him down in court the other day, and you know.
What did he? I'm always curious. What was he doing for profession? I'm guessing publicist when you caught him.
See, that was one of the things that was driving the police nuts, because they couldn't figure out how he was able to stalk these victims. How was he able to shadow them, hide in these homes, and then get away? How was he picking his victims? Police could never figure it out. Well, we now know he was driving dump trucks for a while around construction sites. Then he started working his own landscape business. But then he also construction in Rockville, Maryland. And he actually had a very good job. He was being paid like $150,000 a year as a construction supervisor. And so, you know, going backward now, the cops can say, well, those put him into neighborhoods where he was able to perhaps, you know, eye one of his, you know, possible victims, and then picked them out from there and was able to, you know, hide in plain sight, basically. That's how they think he did it.
Can't wait to walk around by myself for 12 hours in L.A.
Makes you wonder if this guy's just on the job site, just working and making good money. Who do you know in your life, not well, but just like, who do you peripherally experience that has some crazy shit in their background?
You know what I mean?
You're all suspects.
I'm saying this guy's just at the job site, yeah. You know, do this, do that,
and not
sign
under
papers.
And not under an assumed name, right? His own name.
Yeah, he was working under his own name. In fact, one of the detectives that I interviewed said that they actually went to all the plumbers, the electricians, the contractors, anybody who had business in these neighborhoods where the rapes were going on, and asked for all the names of their workers. And then they were running their names in through these databases to see if maybe they had been charged with a crime before, or if they had just gotten out of jail, but nothing was clicking. Mm-hmm. But then now after the arrest, they went back and looked at all their records and looked at all their documents, and they found his name in that list.
Wow.
But he didn't come up as a suspect. His name was there, but there was nothing to say, you know, we need to look at this guy a little closer.
And he's only only on trial for one attack right now.
He murdered allegedly a woman named Christine Merzion in Georgetown, raped and murdered her. But he also raped a woman in D.C. allegedly, and then he raped a number of women here in Montgomery County. So he's on trial right now just for the murder of the scientist. And the prosecutors in D.C. want to be able to tell the jury that he's also accused of all these rapes in Montgomery County. The judge has not ruled on that yet. So we don't know if the jury's going to be able to hear that. Yeah.
And as it pertains to the trial, where are we these days with like DNA evidence? Because I know back in the day, the story was, you have to convince the jury this is real and how it works. Is it just kind of open and shut now?
Juries want to hear about DNA evidence. They're desperate to hear about it. And so in this case, they have DNA in six, seven, eight cases, I guess. But here's the thing. When these days, the DNA is basically like your fingerprint now, because they go and tell the jury that the chance that there's somebody else out there who may have been the real suspect is one in one quadrillion. I mean, think about that. Quadrillion. I mean, I don't even, it's like, how big a number is that?
If
I mean,
we only have 8 billion people, then it's impossible.
Is that mathematically impossible?
Yeah. You know, and that's what they tell the jury. So, and the juries want to hear this. They want to hear about DNA evidence. But, you know, they also want to hear what else you got, you know. Okay, we think this is the guy, but, you know, tell me what else. What else you got up your sleeve, you know? What else can they tie him to?
I feel like I'd be done with the DNA part, because the part where the old lady looked out her window and saw a guy who matched the description when he walked under the streetlight pales in comparison to the quadrillion. Mm-hmm. Paul Wagner, American Nightmare, Unknown Subject, Season 3 available wherever you listen to finer podcasts. CaseJackets.com is where you go to find out more. Paul C. Wagner on Twitter. Good to see you again, Paul.
Yeah, Adam, and thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate it. The last time you had me on, the podcast numbers went way up.
Oh, great.
Oh, thanks, Paul.
He means for us.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Paul, and thanks for finding a scenic area for a nice backdrop.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. John Reap's running a couple of minutes late, but we'll bring him in after we get started right after this.